Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome, you guys. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have to say, I am super excited. I know you guys have heard me say this before, but it's true. We have a very special guest today talking about a really interesting and really uncommon breed in the United States. Desiree Ramirez is going to talk to us about Swedish Laphunds. Okay, this is not Finnish Laphunds, and it's not Icelandic sheepdogs, and it's not Swedish Valhunds. It's none of those things. It is
all different. Yep.
Swedish Laphunds, there are literally 36 dogs in the entire North America, like, continent. And so excited, Desiree. Welcome. We were talking a little bit off air, and I just got all jacked up. So here we go.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
You know what, guys? You wake up early, and you stay up late. And when you have a litter on the ground, sleep is definitely a luxury. You spend your days planning, researching, making sure everything is just right. Your vet team feels like family, and these puppies, they're your heart. When it's time to send them off to their new homes, they deserve to leave with the same protection and love that you've given them from the very start. So that's where Trupanion's Breeder Support Program comes in. Trupanion makes it easy to send your puppies home with immediate pet medical insurance coverage, thanks to their exclusive go-home day offer. No waiting periods or paperwork headaches, just simple, seamless protection starting from day one. And it's not just about coverage. When you join Trupanion's free breeder support program, you also get access to litter health insights, buyer education materials, and vet-approved social media content to help you grow your program and connect with your community. You've done the hard work raising healthy, happy puppies. Now let Trupanion help you protect them as they take their first steps into a brand new world. Join Trupanion's free breeder support program today at trupanion.com/puredogtalk. That's trupanion.com/puredogtalk. Trupanion is underwritten in Canada by Accelerant Insurance Company of Canada, or GPIC Insurance Company, and in the United States by American Pet Insurance Company, or ZPIC Insurance Company.
When people say rare, and I'm like, hi, that's us.
Right. Low entry breed. Yep, got it. Okay, so talk to us a little bit, just a really quick 411 about yourself. How you became interested and involved in such a niche breed.
So, again, my name is Desiree Ramirez. I have Norrland Kennel. Norrland actually means the Northland, which is what they call Northern Sweden. Mm-hmm. Sort of homage to that. So my history was, prior to getting into the breed, I was elbow deep in the rescue world. I mean, going in onto Amish farms, pulling dogs out of the muck.
Wow.
I was an intake coordinator for rescues, going into homes and evaluating for owner surrenders, fostering dozens, like, you name it, I probably did it.
Right.
And after one really bad experience, I was like, I'm done. Yeah. I want reliability and consistency out of the next dog I get. I needed to know what I was getting.
Yeah.
And I started looking around, but I had that, I need to be a part of something feeling, you know, like I wanted to do something that was still preserving and still good.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to get into an odd breed.
Yeah.
And so I made a list, and at the top of my list was the Swedish Laphunds. And that's because I had a chow mix who looked like one, obviously not one.
Right.
I had a chow mix who looked like one. And at some point, someone showed me the, remember that show Dogs 101 from Animal Planet?
Yep. Million years ago.
they did a little video on the Swedish Lappin. And my friend looked at me and was like, hey, that looks like your dog. And I'm like, it's not, I guarantee you.
Right.
But it stayed in the back of my mind.
Right.
So I reached out to the one person who had had a litter in the U.S. And she's like, oh, there's one from my one litter that lives, you know, a couple hours away from you. I'm like, okay, I'll go visit. Thinking I'll visit, then start going down the rest of my list.
Yeah.
I visited that dog and I was done. So I was like, I don't need to see the others on the list. We're good. And that was it.
Awesome.
I never left. That was back in like 2017.
Okay.
2018. And I was like, I'm done. I want no part of any other breed. I'm sold.
So give us kind of the 411 of the Swedish Lapphund. Why it is not the Finnish Lapphund. And some of that. There's some amazing history. And I was, you know, kind of going through your site and talking to you earlier. This is going to be a fascinating deep dive for people. So go ahead on that.
It is. So the Swedish Lappin, we all like to say, oh, it's one of the oldest breeds. It really is. We have archaeological evidence of these Lappish dogs going back 4,000 to 8,000 years. Like some of the first dogs in Scandinavia and Europe.
So and kind of that archetype, right? The archetype of, so there's Mastiff breeds, there's Spitz breeds, there's Sighthound breeds. Those are kind of like the three archetypes. So this is, you're talking about that level.
It's that level. They were the land race archetype. Okay. And these dogs all encoded haplogroup D. And specifically, when we talk about genetics, specifically subclad group D1. Now, haplogroup D, if you don't know anything about genetics,
is you the guys, most... This is great. I'm like geeked out already.
Haplogroup D is the most recent haplogroup in dog genetics that has the most recent wolf ancestry, barring any, you know, modern wolf mixes that we have. It is the most recent dog breed, dog type with wolf ancestry. That's why a lot of these dogs are these Spitzy. That's why they look so wolfy-like. They have a lot of those holdover traits because they're so close. Subclad group D is specific to these Scandinavian breeds. So your Finnish Lappin, your Swedish Lappin, Laponian herders, all the Elkhounds, the Norwegian, the Swedish, the Norwegian Black, they're all coming from that one subclad D. And when people like me, okay, well, what is the Swedish Lappin made of? And I'm like, they're not made of anything. Like, they come from that branch and then it branched out.
Okay. So differentiate them for us, because people will have seen Finnish Lapphunds or an Icelandic sheepdog or a Samoyed. Like, put them in that frame of reference for people who, I mean, they're black. That's like what I got.
I know. I get the comment, oh, I didn't know they come in that color. And I'm like, they only come in this color.
Right.
No. So most people know the Finnish. And Finnish, you look in the ring and you see a rainbow of colors, like black and tan, brown and tan. We'll say it's amazing. Swedish, the most jarring thing people know, they're black. We do have two other colors, however. We have what's called bear brown, which I like to say it's like the color of black coffee. It's black with a brown tinge.
Okay.
And then we have cream. Cream isn't a DQ. It's just not in the standard. So we treat it like a fault.
Okay.
It's the same genetic that makes Yellow Labs yellow.
Right. It's a dilute of,
exactly. So when you look at a Swedish Lappin, one of the big things you'll know besides color is that they should be longer in the body. They should have a little bit more rectangular to their appearance, and they should have more angulation.
Okay. But they're not just a black Finnish Lappin.
They're not.
That's the thing that I want to make clear. They are completely separate.
They are very different.
Their own thing. Okay.
Yep. Their eyes are different. They should have this little bit more foxy look to them. When you look at one, you'd be like, that looks like a black fox. You should have that look of like, this is a really primitive looking dog.
Okay.
They should also have a glossy coat. When you see a Swedish Lappin out in the sun, you should see that coat shine just like you sprayed a mirror over it.
Interesting. Does it lay differently than the Finnish Lappin? Because the Finnish Lappins are kind of fluffy, right?
Versus... It's still fluffy and profuse, but you'll notice a lot of times, especially on the top line, it does tend to be a little flatter, a little sleeker. Mm-hmm. We also don't like coats to be exaggerated. We want to see the silhouette of the dog. You should see the tuck. You should see all of that still. So we want a nice, good silhouette. And we do show our dogs even when they're not in coat.
Okay.
So you'll see that range in the show ring of ones that are heavy coated for this winter, but also really sleek almost. The other thing that makes them really different, this is where they really shine between the two of them, is their temperament.
Okay.
Swedish Lappens are a little bit more drivey. The first comparison I ever heard between the two of them was, it's like comparing a V6 and a V8 engine. Like,
cute.
The Swedish Lappen is just going to drive and push, and they really want to work. But they also, they're the ones that's going to turn around and look at you in the yard and be like, okay, what are we doing next?
Okay.
That handler focus that they have, it is extreme. They're always looking for you for that next thing that you want to do. And they don't really have that painted on ears that I know Finnish Lappen people like to say that a lot.
Right.
Their ears are there and they work. They're just usually also a little smaller and a little leaner.
Okay.
So when you look at a Swedish Lappen, you're going to see a dog that is just, you're like, that looks like a weirder Finnish Lappen at first.
Mm-hmm.
And you might look at it like, that's odd, but it's different.
So this is fascinating to me because both of the breeds, the Finnish and the Swedish Lappen, from my understanding of what I read, originated with the Sami people, right?
They did.
Scandinavia. So was it different regions? How did they sort of develop into their own pieces?
So the Swedish Lappen, I know the name says Swedish, but they were actually just as popular in Norway. The Swedish Lappen basically comes from Sweden and Norway. And the Finnish Lappen, while covering those areas, mostly you would see in Finland. And one of the things is that the tribes that had the Swedish Lappen really liked the darker dogs. They wanted dogs that would be stark against the snow, that didn't have the coloring of a predator, so no wolfy gray coloring. And they wanted dogs that were really sort of this very sleek looking dog. And you still look at photos from 140 years ago and the dogs look exactly the same.
Wow.
So there was very much a type that they liked. And what happened is Sweden beat Finland into registering the dogs. So the Swedish Kennel Club started in about 1893, and they registered a long-haired Lappen as their first dog. Now, that would eventually change in the 1950s to the Swedish Lappen. So they registered first, wrote the first standard, and said, this is what we like. And then the Finnish people got decades later on the ball. So it was one of those, is like, the Swedish said, this is what we like first. So they beat the Finnish people there.
And yet the Finnish Lappen came to the U.S. first and went through the process and is now, you know, pretty well established, I would say.
Yeah, I think the first Swedish Lappen didn't come to the U.S. until 2004.
Right.
And that was by Patricia Arfston from a Clary Hill Kennel. And it was a female named Lottie. Lottie wasn't even able to have a litter, and it wouldn't be until 2015 that the first litter was bred here in the States. So 10 years ago was our first litter.
Wow, that's amazing. And give people a sense of, I mean, when we say the indigenous tribe and the region, talk a little bit about that, because that so much affects the animals and the, the dogs that they choose based on the work that they do.
Yeah. So the Swedish Lappen or the Lappish dogs were from the Sami people. And these dogs had to be versatile. They had to do everything. So hunting, herding, guarding, keeping the people warm. They had to do it all. There was no ability to specialize.
Right.
If the owner needed it, that dog was doing it. And to this day, they still like to have a variety within the litter of temperament. So you might have a dog that's really good at hunting, which we still have dogs hunting, and you might have one that herds, and you might have one that is really just a great couch potato. And they love that. They love that versatility and variety of temperament within the breed. We don't want a cookie cutter.
Interesting. You mentioned earlier the different, you know, the Sami people. There's obviously different tribes in different regions. Then one of them was over to Finland and one of them was over here in Sweden and Norway. And it's all cold. It's all snow and reindeer. Is that our herding?
Yes. Yeah. So in the Sami people, reindeer herding was their biggest thing. It's not sheep, not cattle, it's reindeer. And that's been going on since, I think, reindeer domestication started in about the 15th century. Yeah. That's the first documentation that we have, including the dogs at that time. Okay. They talk about the dogs at that same time. And so reindeer herding is a lot different than herding a cow or a sheep. The dog cannot touch the reindeer. So strictly they can bark, they can threaten. Touching the reindeer is a whole nother story. Don't touch the reindeer.
Seems like a bad idea to me, but is, what do I know?
Yeah. It's like, don't touch the reindeer because one, that's a lot of stuff on the top of the head. Mm. And two, reindeer are actually really delicate. Like,
oh, interesting.
I know Linda Martin probably talked about that in her post when she talked about you, about like, you know, they're very sensitive to disease, but they have super delicate legs. Mm-hmm. So a dog bite, like a heeler nips.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If a reindeer herding dog was going to nip the leg, that deer might be then and done. Just, you might have to just let go. Yeah. Wow. So barking was how they hurt. And that affected, you know, the type of dog that comes out. You want a dog that's not prone to being mouthy. You want a dog that is loud. And they're known for that.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Hey, you guys. Purina Pro Plan is introducing Ultra Soft Puppy Starter Mousse. Yay! If you're looking for a food to help puppies transition to their first solid dry food, Puppy Starter Mousse is a soft, highly palatable wet food that offers advanced nutrition for the puppy life stage. It is an ideal food to supplement a weaning plan for puppies 3 weeks of age and older. The mousse-like consistency makes Puppy Starter Mousse easy for puppies to eat and digest. Puppy Starter Mousse is a convenient wet food option available in a 5.5-ounce chicken entree. Pro Plan Puppy Starter Mousse debuts June 2nd, whoop whoop, at PetSmart, Chewy, and Amazon. Choose Pro Plan Puppy Starter Mousse as you transition puppies to a lifetime of optimal nutrition. All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. So I'm now having a flashback to the Finnish Spitz National that I went to, where their job was to bark the birds out of the trees. And I'm like, yep, they're purebred.
And that's it. So people ask me, because they're like, when they see I say hunting, and they're like, wait a minute, this dog's in the herding group. And I'm like, yeah, but their first job was hunting. And they still are used. I think I know more dogs used for hunting in the breed than herding, actually. But they hunt by herding. And then they herd, say, moose, because mostly I see them used on moose and boar. They'll herd the moose and boar and then bark basically until the hunter comes and takes the shot.
You know, this is so fascinating because you mentioned earlier the haplogroup that also includes Norwegian Elkhounds. That's what they do. So
it's exactly the same.
Yeah, no, it's literally, I talked to a Norwegian hunter, right, who hunts with her Norwegian moose with her Norwegian Elkhounds. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do. So, I mean, to me, as we were talking about off air, the archetypes, right? The British Isles produced a million terriers and France produced a million spaniels. And the archetype from the Northern European area is this Spitz that then was kind of broken out into regions, into systems, and all the rest of it.
And that's exactly it. This is just a Spitz that then broke away from the land race, the type. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the elk hound specialized in hunting. They got really good at that. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Laponians and the Finnish, which were more used for herding than the Swedish. So you have that sort of break, and they're really good at herding. Mm-hmm. And you got the Swedish Lappens, which, yeah, herding is what they're most known for, but they're like, eh, we want them to still do it all. So they sort of just went this way on the branch.
Interesting. And I don't know, to me, that kind of stuff, the real archetype land race and how they then came down to where we are today is just a mm-hmm. fascinating and beautiful story. The other thing that I think is incredible, and I've talked to other people about this, I've talked to a lot of people with a variety of FSS breeds, I've judged FSS shows, and it is my experience, my eyewitness experience, that the passion, the most excited and passionate group of people that I encounter at any dog show is at the FSS group. And so talk a little bit about your club, because you mentioned something off air that none of you guys came from other like purebred dogs.
No, none of us did. There is not a single person in our club that was showing dogs before they had a Swedish Lappened. Like zero, zip. All of us have dog experience and some purebred, but not like in the same way. Like it's not mm-hmm. confirmation. It's not the same sport, you know, mm-hmm. breed related sports. And like my example, again, I was rescue. Patricia Arson, who brought the first dogs in, was also rescue. A couple people who had dogs from the first litter, one that went on to have another litter, all had rescue. So we came from this different background, but we were so passionate about this breed that we said, all right, let's brave this new world. And we have jumped headlong into preservation breeding. You know,
so rescuing an entire breed rather than a group of animals.
Right. Like we were just like, we love this breed so much that we will do anything to keep them alive, even if that means dressing up and going around in a circle.
And so there's only 36 of them in North America. What are the numbers like, you know, are they still living with the indigenous people in Sweden?
Absolutely. Yeah, you'll still see them in Sweden and Norway and the Sami people. Mm-hmm. One of the big kennels, Choppy, she just had a litter and a couple of them went off to go do reindeer work. A couple went off to go hunting and a couple are going to start showing. You know, you see that still. Most of the dogs today are on three continents, Europe, North America, and then we have a couple in Australia.
Oh, interesting.
Random Australia. That's it. We don't have any in South America, Central Asia, Africa, that's it. There are less than 1,600 in the entire world. Wow. That's it. Wow. We know every breeder. We have records everywhere. Like, it's a huge tracking system. And that's why when people tell me, oh, I have a rescue one from random Podunk, Nevada shelter. And I'm like, you likely
no, you
do
don't.
Not.
No, you don't. Okay, so herding dogs who barked to herd. Talk about living with these dogs.
I'm going to say that surprisingly, they are really easy to live with. When they bark, they should be barking for a purpose. They're not going to bark because the wind is blowing. Mm. That would be annoying. And if you think about it, that was probably annoying back then. If you had a dog that just randomly barked for no reason and it scared the reindeer, well, shoot, they're not going to do their job correctly. You don't even know it, but I have two of them in the room right now who have not said a single peep. That said, we do have some that are on the opposite side that are much more barky.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a wide range, but living with them in general, they're, as I said, I've had experienced so many breeds and I'm also a professional groomer, so I have hands on breeds all the time.
Sure.
they're so easy to live with. Like, it just makes life so easy to come home and have a dog that just, they're like, hi, how are you today? And just want to cuddle.
Do they get along? Like, no dog aggression, no people aggression. They're just, that is not a thing.
Aggression is a serious DQ for us. Like, we handle that severely. So no aggression of any kind towards dogs, same sex or not. You may see some intact males squabble a little bit, but that's dogs. Intact. Hormones, They should be good with small animals. I have two cats. We have one that has rabbits. We have, a lot of people have chickens. They should do well with any small animal that they've been introduced to, that they know is part of the family. I've actually had one of my dogs greet the feral cat that roams around our backyard. They're like, oh, hi, how are you today? I wish they would scare her off.
Yeah, but right. I can loan you a wire hair. It'll be okay.
So small animals, we know one person who goes riding on her horses and the dog just struts along behind the horses. Just perfect when it comes to that. They adore children. Absolutely love children almost to death. Like, it is a love. Funny story, at the one show I was at, it was late. This is like the last show of the weekend. The dogs were drained. It was pouring rain and we were outside. This is that Norwalk show here in New England. Oh, everyone remembers that show. It was pouring rain and the dogs are just drained. People are drained. And then these kid spectators come up and you see the dogs go from like 0 to 10. Like, they're just, oh my God, kids. So they're the perfect family. And that's, most of the dogs in the States are actually in family homes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you're in FSS aiming towards the herding group. Yes.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something earlier in an email or something. I think you have plans. Are you looking at being able to move up to miscellaneous? Where are you in that process?
We're a long way.
Yeah. 36 dogs. You're pretty far.
Right. We're a very long way. And I think right now our plan is just to have healthy growth. We are not aiming for speed. We know that speed isn't going to get us exactly what we need. We want a good, solid community of people, and we want a good, healthy community of dogs. So if that means it takes another couple decades to get there, so be it.
It's all good. And speaking of health, any particular notable, extra random, weird health stuff for these guys?
Nope. I mean, we do test for hip dysplasia, but I would say only about 7% of the breed is likely to have it. All breeders should be testing their puppies for PRA, progressive retinal atrophy, before they leave. And we do recommend to have an eye exam as well. Eye issues aren't common, but they're a Spitz breed. Spitz are prone to eye issues in general. Sure. So it's better to do that than not. We haven't had a case of PRA in probably close to a decade, despite that we allow clear to carrier, but we're so careful. Like, the community is just on point when it comes to health testing. It's a weird thing if you see one that's not from health tested stock.
Well, clear to carrier, you shouldn't be getting any affected dogs anyway. So should
exactly.
Be with we that small a gene pool, I hope you're doing clear to carrier.
Yes, exactly. Cancer's not high. Really, a handful of cases, like I think maybe one hand of epilepsy or Addison's, and they're not related to each other. So it's just that random thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, our health has gotten so much better in general. When I joined, I would say in the early 2000s too, and then 2010, the average litter size was like 3 dogs. Like inbreeding depression was there.
Yeah.
It's now 6.
Good.
In 15 years, they have brought the average litter size way up.
Nice.
Dogs live to like 13, 14 years old now with very little problems.
So intentional selective breeding versus maybe not as much so with the indigenous people.
Even the indigenous people were very careful.
Okay.
Like, they used good maternal stock. It was mostly the maternal lines that mattered. Because a lot of times, and this is anthropologists used to tell the stories of how they would literally tie the healthy female out. They would only keep one good, healthy female, maybe a couple others, but they had to be a really good female. And they would tie her up and let her decide the male.
Oh, interesting.
So it was like, that's a random way of doing this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was healthy and healthy. Like, these mm-hmm. were dogs that were working. These were dogs that they had no problems calling back then.
Yeah.
We don't know if they're still doing that now. We sort of hope not, but
it's a thing. I mean,
it's a thing.
Most of our breeds started that way. So, you know.
Exactly. But to this day, we still have, I mean, even the indigenous people today, they're still really good about breeding healthy stock. We shouldn't be breeding dogs that are sick.
Yeah.
And the majority of the club, so we have, not many people know that in Sweden, they have the RAS, the breeding specific protocol.
Right.
Breed clubs have to do that every 5 years. And this is a breeding strategy that is developed by the breed club saying, you know, you have to follow these guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, you know, here's what we recommend. Mm. And so us as a breed community, we follow that on an international scale.
Okay.
So we have very specific breeding strategies that we have to follow. And the whole community voluntarily follows this.
Interesting. Give me a for example.
So if one of the examples is, this is the one that always kills people when I mention this. We have a cap on how many puppies an individual dog can have.
Male or female?
Male or female. Does not matter. So it's based on the percentage per population. So mm-hmm. right now, a male or female can have no more. The recommendation is no more than 16. If you live in Sweden, after 25, they'll revoke the registration of those puppies.
Oh, interesting.
But at 16, that is our recommended cap. And that's to avoid bottlenecks and matadors sure, sure. and things like sure, that. Sure.
Yeah.
So that's one of the recommendations. And I remember posting about that in one of the dog groups and people were just like mind blown about like, how can you do that? I'm like, well, it's hard.
Honestly, sensible dog breeding that in order to avoid exactly the predominant sire syndrome is, I don't know that 16 is the number I'd pick, but a lot less than the 500 that you see out of some of these stud dogs and more popular breeds.
Well, and that's the reason our number is what it is because it's a percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that dog. And we have a small population. So 16 is a small number. If the breed population gets to 3,000, I'm sure that number will go up.
There you go. Okay.
But it's to make sure that we don't have a bottleneck. And a bottleneck in a breed this tiny?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're doomed.
Well, you know, Lundahunds, here we are, right? So right. a lot of the breeds that are in small numbers have those sorts of struggles. Okay. And final question, you'll do herding events. Will they participate in like AKC herding events or can they now?
Yeah, actually they can. So Patricia Arfston actually has herding titles on her dogs and the Clary cool. Hill. So she actually has herding, but you'll see a Swedish Lappin doing everything.
Very cool. Very cool. I really appreciate this, Desiree. This is so cool.
No that problem. It, you know,
like, archetypes and haplotypes. I'm like, all about it.
Yeah, we love talking genetics in the breed. It's really easy to find somebody in the breed and just like, let's just geek talk in genetics for a little bit. It's so easy and so much fun.
Cool. Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you sharing with us. I know that you will send us some photos that will, I see a yes. tail. That's a cat, not a dog. Okay.
That's a cat. My cat will leave me alone. He was bothering the one dog laying on top of her. And then he was like, I'm going to bother you while you're recording.
It's a cat. Definitely a cat. All right. Well, Desiree, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
And no problem.
I'll let you go deal with Mr. Kitty, who's mad. Hey, guys. I am super excited about this. Marty and I have been working on a brand new series of seminars that we're bringing to the Dog Fancy, called Pedigrees to Pups, and we are launching it with sort of a taste test on June 13th here in Grants Pass, Oregon, my hometown, with my local dog show. We are bringing together the art and the science of dog breeding in one place, and we're so excited. We're going to talk everything from selecting your foundation bitch and stud dog, to reading pedigrees and breeding theory, to mating and whelping. The event here in Grants Pass is a short little overview, 3 hours before the dog show starts. And on the weekend of September 5th in Hawaii, we will have a 3-day seminar. And the following weekend in Wisconsin, we'll have another 2-day seminar. And so if you're really interested in doing a deep dive, you want to hang out with Marty and I, ask questions, get one-on-one advice, up close and personal mentoring, this is the way to do it. Stop by puredogtalk.com, go to the events page, and you will find out about the event in June. And we'll keep it updated as we have details on the events in Hawaii and Wisconsin. We look forward to seeing you guys there and cannot wait to kick off this seminar series. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.